We're talking about the future of fish farming or aquaculture here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. According to the World Wildlife Fund, almost half of the seafood we eat comes from farms. And aquaculture is the fastest growing food production system in the world. Billions of people rely on farm-raised seafood for their primary source of protein. What is the state of aquaculture and the industry in Wisconsin? Join in at any point. If you're a fish farmer, you eat fish, you serve it or buy it in your line of work, we're at 800-642-1234. Chris Hartlib is fisheries biology professor at UW Stevens Point, where he directs the Northern Aquaculture Demonstration Facility. Chris, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning.
Good morning. We also have Brandon Gottsacker, who is president of Superior Fresh. That's a large aquaponic farm on about 800 acres in Hixton in west central Wisconsin, specializing in organic leafy greens and Atlantic salmon. Brandon, welcome to you.
Good morning, Kate. Thank you.
Yeah, well, Brandon, let's start with you. And I think we need to start with our veggies because we always eat our veggies first. Some of us know you by your glow at night, and that's the glow of those grow lights we see from I-94. Can you describe, so we can get a picture in our mind's eye, your 6-acre greenhouse and what's going on inside?
Sure. So inside our 6-acre greenhouse, we have organic leafy green vegetables that require light to grow, obviously, as all plants do. But in the winter times, we don't get a ton of light. The days are short, so we have to supplement light. So we use LED grow lights. They're very cost-effective to run and operate compared to the conventional high-pressure sodium bulbs that are usually used in greenhouse applications. They're about 60 to 70% more efficient, and they actually give us the opportunity to cater the light spectrum to what the plants need, and that's why you see that pink glow. It's actually a mixture of both red and blue light, making it look pink or purple.
Oh, sure it is. Absolutely. And so these greens are growing in water.
Correct. We don't have any soil. We do use a media for the seed and the roots to hold on to, but we don't use any type of other soil or anything like that. The roots just simply hang in the nutrient-rich water that comes from the fish. So it's a real easy way to deliver nutrients to the plants.
So the fish waste provides the nutrients for the plants you're growing, for the vegetables you're growing, and the water recirculates between the tanks. And then if all goes right, you've got this balanced artificial watery ecosystem in Hixton?
That's exactly right. So, we grow Atlantic salmon, and instead of what a typical, not all fish farms, but a typical or conventional net pen cage farm or something like that for Atlantic salmon, they don't have any waste capture. So with our model, we want to capture everything possible. So there's a lot of additional nutrients that are in the fish waste. We take those nutrients, collect them, harness them. We digest, break down the waste. We utilize that nutrient-rich water, and we pump that over to the leafy green greenhouse. The plants can utilize those nutrients very easily, and then the water just simply overflows from the greenhouse back to the fish house. That gives us the ability to utilize a whole heck of a lot less water than a typical hydroponic farm and a typical aquaculture farm, making it aquaponics. And so today we actually feed our fish about 1 pound of food. We get 1 pound of fish, and then we get up to another 10 pounds of organic leafy green vegetables. So when you look at that ratio of 1 pound in, of fish food and 11 pounds of human food out, it's pretty astounding.
Chris, is this astounding as you look at other fish farm operations around Wisconsin?
Yes, as Brandon was mentioning, it's a very efficient system that conserves the use of water and protects waste from entering the environment. And because of it, it's very sustainable and people like it a lot. Both from large operations like Brandon's at Superior Fresh, all the way down to, say, a little family farm. People really enjoy the food. It's fresh, and it's from right around the corner.
Yeah, I mean, but some would say that this is really hard to do in Wisconsin. We're landlocked. We're really cold in the winter. You have to keep these greenhouses really warm. So is this artificial system really feasible in our state, Chris?
Well, it is, because yes, you do have to heat the greenhouse in the wintertime. But on the other hand, your transportation costs are minimal because it's being served up to stores and restaurants right around the corner in your neighborhood. Whereas regular produce in the wintertime has to come from Arizona and California with a high trucking expense to it.
Yeah. We're discussing the aquaponics industry here in Wisconsin. We have Chris Hartlib there and Brandon Gottsacker. Brandon is the president of an aquaponic farm in West Central Wisconsin. Chris teaches courses, is a professor and teaches courses in aquaculture and fish ecology at UW Stevens Point. You can join in. Do you own a fish farm operation in Wisconsin? How has business been going in the pandemic? How have product sales been? Have you been able to get your regular access to the supplies you need to operate? Join in at 800-642-1234. Chris, why do we have fish farms? Explain the need for them.
Well, one of the things we know is that about 90% of ocean fish are being overfished. So not only in the U.S., but worldwide, people have a desire to consume fish as their protein source. And with fewer fish in the sea, they've got to come from somewhere else. And fish farming is that location where they can get their fish from. And one thing we know about fish is when it comes to the major food groups, or should say protein food groups of cattle, poultry, and swine, fish are actually the most efficient animal to raise. As Brandon was mentioning, you can put in a pound of fish food and you get a pound of fish fillets back from that. That's so much better than it is with cows, chickens, and pigs.
Brandon, let us take a look at your tanks. How big are your tanks? How many fish? How do you handle those?
Sure. So we've got, I would say, over 50 fish tanks on site. Our biggest fish tanks are about 140,000 gallons. We actually just started stocking those. With Atlantic Salmon recently. So we just completed our expansion, our phase two expansion. And so 140,000 gallons each, there's about 12 of those tanks, and each tank would contain anywhere between 12 and 14,000 Atlantic Salmon up to 10 pounds a piece when they're ready to be harvested.
Wow. You know, I would imagine that school groups, kids, you know, in a non-pandemic time would love to see this operation, that just looking inside all those tanks would be amazing.
Yeah, we have school groups here. This was pre-COVID. We had school groups here regularly at all ages, not only for the fish farm and the hydroponic facility, but also on the property to be able to see the native restoration project that's taking place. The project as a whole is a great learning tool.
Tell us a little bit more about that native restoration you're doing.
So that was the original kind of plan for the property here in Northfield. And Todd and Karen Wanick are the owners of the property. Todd is the president and CEO of Ashley Furniture. And Karen's got an amazing farming background. And when they saw this piece of property, they saw the opportunity to convert it back to its native state. It's just an absolute beautiful site. Rolling hills, two man-made lakes on the property. And they wanted to convert all the conventional agriculture here to native flowers and oak savannas. And so we do a lot of plantings on site. I think we've restored a little over 200 acres of native flowers, all native to the state of Wisconsin. And that's continuing. The goal is to complete the whole property over the next handful of years.
And the property is nearly 800 acres. Is that right?
Correct. Yep, yeah. 800 acres on the dot. But it ties really well into the aquaponics farm with the efficiencies that come along with that. We can grow more product and more food more sustainably in just a small footprint versus the rest of the 800 acres.
Talking with Brandon Gottsacker, who runs a large aquaponics facility in Wisconsin, raising vegetables and fish. Chris Hartlib is a fisheries biology professor at UW Stevens Point. What questions do you have about farm-raised salmon and how aquaponics works with the cycle of plants and fish? 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. We're looking at the growth of the aquaponics industry and what it means for Wisconsin, especially amid COVID. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Aquaponics allows you to raise and grow a protein, think salmon, steelhead trout, and a vegetable crop, think leafy greens, at the same time. Are land-based salmon farms sustainable and a growth industry here in Wisconsin? Question worth exploring with your take on aquaponics at 800-642-1234. Brandon Gottsacker runs a large aquaponics farm in Hixton. Chris Hartlib is director of the Northern Aquaculture Demonstration Facility and a professor at UW-Stevens Point. And they're with us for the hour. Let's bring in a call now. Don is joining us from Door County this morning. Hi, Don.
Good morning, and thank you for the program, and thank you for your wonderful guests. I am thrilled to hear about the system and how it works, as opposed to some of the problems that have occurred with, I think you described it as open water net pen farm-raised fish, where they're not capturing the waste of the fish. And the other problem with that type of fish farming was the need to use antibiotics in a hard, in high quantities, similar to the problems that come out of the cattle and hog farm CAFO model, where they're using clean water to rinse waste out. It's not recycled, and the model you guys present of composting the fish waste and then feeding it to it is the model that needs to be used to save the groundwater and surface water in the state, and it's being ignored by our legislators. So it's so nice to see a working system. You guys are using it as an example here to do something, sustainable.
Yeah, and I want to get Brandon to respond first to you, Don. Brandon, what would you say to Don's comment?
Yeah, no, thank you, Don. You're exactly right. I mean, over 90% of all the Atlantic salmon consumed in the United States is imported from Canada, Norway, or Chile. And these Atlantic salmon are raised in massive net pens where the waste is just allowed to float to the bottom of the ocean. And so none of it is captured. And being in that wild environment, they have to use things like pesticides and antibiotics. Here at Superior Fresh, we don't need to use any of those things. We never have and never plan to do such a thing because we can control the environment in which the fish live. And so we monitor the water chemistry and the water quality daily, multiple times a day. And we know how the fish, need to react to different water qualities. And so we never have to use anything like that in the facilities at all.
Chris, would you like to add there to Brandon on what Don has observed?
Sure. I mean, I would go as far to say that that land-based aquaculture is really the future of fish farming because it allows you to capture all that waste and then treat it properly instead of just diluting it out into the oceans. So we're starting to see the industry have somewhat of a shift where we're seeing more places like Superior Fresh pop up because they can manage that waste.
And Brandon, you're actually composting. You've got a big compost operation for waste as well.
Yeah, you bet. We work with the Wisconsin DNR. We have a nutrient management plan that allows us to utilize all the offal from the fish, any unthrifty heads of lettuce, roots, things like that, all get composted right on site. And then we use that as a soil amendment right back on the farm on all our native ground.
Do you find that that works well for you in turning your ground back to savanna?
Absolutely. It helps a ton. And we also, we don't discharge any of our production water to surface waters of the state. So none of the water that the fish are grown in actually goes to the river. We capture all of that water. We store it during the winter months, and then we irrigate it on about 55 acres. So that's another step as well that's included when it comes to the sustainability and water use. We can actually just irrigate all our production water because we use so little of it with this model.
I'm going to reintroduce you here. That's Brandon Gottsacker, who is president of an aquaponics farm in West Central Wisconsin. Chris Hartlib is here. Chris teaches courses in aquaculture and fish ecology at UW-Stevens Point. Taking your questions about aquaponics as well at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Cindy now in Appleton. Hi, Cindy.
Good morning. Well, I just kind of like to feed off your last caller. I have fish myself, and I know the tanks can get really kind of gross and disgusting. So how do you you know, get the water clean and regenerate the water so that it doesn't get all slimy and icky and sort of feeding up where, you know, the water gets gross enough that the fish aren't even safe in it anymore. So how do you actually do that?
Brandon?
That is a great question. So the way the systems are designed, they're almost self-cleaning. We use circular tanks and we inject the water or allow the water to gravity feed into the tanks tangentially, creating a rotational velocity that will bring all the solids, all the fish waste, the uneaten feed to the center of the tank. Right after that, there's a radial flow settler that captures all the solids, and then we can pull those out of the system manually. We also have 60 micron screen drum filters that remove very fine particles, and then very large fluidized sand biofilters that turn all the ammonia that the fish excrete into the water into nitrate, which is the usable form of nitrogen for the plants to grow. So the system is fairly self-cleaning. We do have a staff that's in the facility every day, you know, brushing tanks and making sure there's no buildup of bioflock and things like that in the systems, but the water overall is very, very clean.
This is not your kid's bedroom tank system here.
Much, much different.
Let's bring in David in Green Bay with a question. Hi, David.
Yeah, good morning. Hey, I had a question about you know, your fish raising operation. You know, normally fish breed once a year, and I would assume that you have probably developed some way of getting them to do it more times, so you have a continuous product available for market, or are you literally just raising one batch a year and raising enough of them you can satisfy all year?
David, thank you. Yeah, go ahead, Brendan.
So we actually bring in eggs from two different suppliers right now. So we order eggs. We basically get them in a little styrofoam cooler box with ice. We get eggs from a place in Iceland and then also another partner over in Washington State. And so we ship the eggs here. So they handle all the brood stock. For Atlantic salmon, it actually takes 3 to 4 years before you can harvest eggs from a salmon. And so they have multiple families where they can actually harvest eggs every week of the year, which is quite an operation. And these companies are servicing aquaculture farms all over the world. So we bring in eggs, hatch them here on site, and then grow them out. And we harvest from a lot of fish over that two-month period so that we have fresh fish that we're harvesting every week of the year.
Chris, can you alter fish breeding cycles?
Sure. I was going to say that's one of the steps in aquaculture is what they simply refer to as domestication, which means that the culturist, the farmer, takes over control of the life cycle of the fish instead of letting it naturally happen. So as Brandon was describing, the domestication of reproduction means that you would alter the cycle and you would have fish that normally spawn in the spring instead lay their eggs in the fall. And you, what you do is you do what's referred to as out-of-cycle reproduction. And with fish, it's not that difficult. They can be stubborn at times, but basically what you have to do is you have to simulate conditions of either spring or fall, where you have increasing temperatures, increasing daylight in the spring or decreasing in the fall, and this then triggers the reproduction by the fish.
So okay,
if you can artificially control those factors, then you can have the fish spawn out of season.
So you can kind of just trick them to spawn out of season, if you will.
Yep. You make them think that it's fall when it's really spring.
Chris, how have you seen this industry change and adjust amid the pandemic? What's going on?
Well, you know, there have been some surveys done during the course of the year so far. And unfortunately, like most of us, the aquaculture and aquaponics industries have been impacted. Basically, about 80% of the industry has indicated that they have lost sales or contracts due to the pandemic. I think what's even worse is that about 9 to 10% of them have indicated that they're probably going to go bankrupt before the end of the year. Mm. So aquaculture is not immune to COVID.
Yeah. Brandon, what has it been like for you running your business in the pandemic?
It's been, you know, it's been a pain, but we've definitely done a good job of fighting through it. You know, we're still fairly small. We're not producing a lot of fish, only about 4,000 pounds a week or so. So we've been lucky that we've been able to continue to sell all of our fish. You know, with the produce, we had to shift a little bit with food service kind of taking the biggest hit and the brunt of things. We were able to
transition fairly quickly to more retail, which is what we're doing now. So far we're pretty lucky.
Have you been able to get the PPE that you've needed to carry out your operations?
We have, and we increased PPE when COVID hit, but it wasn't that big of a transition for our team. We're SQF certified. Food safety is an extremely important piece of the puzzle here at the farm. And so our staff is very used to having to wear PPE, but things like masks, face shields, various barriers in the facility, things like that are what we've, you know, kind of had to implement and adjust to. And so far, knock on wood, we haven't had any issues getting any PPE for our staff.
Brandon Gottsacker, president of Superior Fish, Chris Hartlib, professor of fisheries biology at UW Stevens Point. Do you live near a fish farm? What is it like? Are you concerned about fish farm pollution? What do you want to know about the processes? 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're learning all about aquaponics here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Aquaponics is a combination of aquaculture, that's raising fish in water, and hydroponics, raising plants in water where they get all the nutrients directly from the water. Put the two together and you get aquaponics, and that's an industry that is on the move here in Wisconsin. Can we defy nature? Can we grow produce all year long? Can we raise the tastiest Atlantic salmon where hundreds of thousands of fish swim in giant tanks? Join in, 800-642-1234. Your thoughts, your questions, welcome. Brandon Gottsacker is president of a massive aquaponics operation in West Central Wisconsin. And Professor Chris Hartlib teaches courses in aquaculture and fisheries ecology at UW's Stevens Point. They're with us for the hour. Let's bring in Robin in Milwaukee with a question. Hi, Robin. Go ahead.
Hi. My question is for Brandon. Since science tells us that fish are sentient beings like other animals, how is it ethical to confine fish to a life of overcrowding and deny them everything that's natural to them?
Brandon, go ahead.
Yeah, that's a tough question. I've never been asked that before. We really focus on a truly optimal environment for these fish. Again, we never have to feed these fish any type of antibiotics. We don't have to vaccinate these fish. We don't have to treat them in any way. Therefore, you know, that water quality and water chemistry and the environment that they're in is at a stage where the fish can be healthy their entire life. And so, I mean, the alternative is to raise these fish in the ocean in a net pen, where they do need to be fed all those items and all those things in order to just keep that fish alive. I would say that we give them the opportunity to live out a healthy life before, we take them for ourselves.
What is the process like in how they are harvested? What do you have to abide by there?
Sure. So we have something called BAP certification, Best Aquaculture Practices, and that's a third party that comes in and audits the farm and all of our farming practices. And we also have an animal welfare certification and non-GMO certification. So we don't use any genetically modified ingredients in our feed or anywhere on the farm. But then the animal welfare piece, they come in and they audit our process. And typically, you think about it, if you're to hook and line a fish, and that fish is going to struggle before you kill it, before you bring it into the boat. Here at the farm, that fish is in the tank, and it takes about 4 to 5 seconds before that fish is killed. So there's no struggle at all with that fish. It happens extremely quickly. We use a stun and bleed system, it's called, and it's a very quick way to take that fish to its death. And then we gut the fish all on site here. They go on ice, they get packed on ice right away, and they get shipped out to a processor in Minneapolis and one in Chicago right now.
What is the taste difference between a wild-caught fish and a fish that is raised on a farm? And I'm going to have Chris go first.
Sure. I mean, it's more personal preference than anything. And that is that I find that fish raised in a sustainable environment such as aquaponics actually have a better, cleaner flavor to them. They do go through a process of purge where, as Brandon was just describing, when it comes to the end of the life of the fish, they're placed into tanks with very clean water to flush out any what they call off flavors. You know, in the wild, you know, sometimes you can get fish that taste just great, and other times you have no idea where that fish has been, and it may start to get something like an earthy flavor to it, an off flavor. So I find mostly under, you know, aquaponic conditions, the fish actually tastes better, cleaner.
Brandon, what about you? What is your sense in the taste difference between wild caught and fish farmed fish?
Yeah, I would second what Chris said. You know, we spend a lot of time here at the farm monitoring and understanding what the compounds are in the water that create what you call off flavor. And it's not something you typically talk about or people know too much about, but we monitor that regularly. And our fish have a very rich, buttery flavor. They're a very fatty fish, and it's all about the feed. And so what you put in that fish is what you're going to get out of that fish. And so, again, very buttery, very flaky, strong fillet, not a very strong fishy flavor, which is what you typically would get from the wild. Actually, it's funny, the comment we get regularly on our social pages or to our website is that our fish smell like strawberries or watermelon, because it's so fresh. It's not handed over through, you know, five or six different hands. It all happens right here on the farm, and it's really quick. So it's a really, really good quality fillet.
Explain how your fish get to consumers and where consumers find your fish.
Sure. So we, again, harvest and gut the fish here on site. Actually, with our new expansion, we'll be able to do some processing in-house. But today we just simply gut the fish. They go on ice right away. And then they're shipped to a couple different processors between Minneapolis and Chicago. They're further processed, typically down into a fillet or portioned. And then they go to retailers around the Midwest. The primary Wisconsin retailers would be like Festival Foods, Metcalf, Sendix, Triggs. That's where you can find our fish now. And with the expansion, hopefully we're in every retailer in Wisconsin and in the Midwest. And pretty soon here, you'll actually be able to order our fish online and we'll ship it direct to your home.
Wow. So certainly growth in your business. You know, at the fish counter, it's often, Chris, you see labeled, this is wild caught or this is farm raised. How important is that labeling to consumers and what should we know about those labels?
Sure. I mean, there's two sets of labels, as you said, farm raised or wild, and then the other is usually the country of origin.
Mm-hmm.
And often when people hear the negative effects of aquaculture, aquaponics, such as we had a caller before that was mentioning antibiotics put into the system or dirty water that was used. You know, I hate to say it, but a lot of that is what, you know, comes about from foreign aquaculture. And then those fish are imported into the U.S. In fact, 90% of the seafood we eat in the U.S. is imported from foreign countries. And a lot of those have less or fewer regulations to keep your food safe and clean. So usually what I tell people is when you go to the store to buy seafood, look for U.S. farm-raised seafood. Because we have such strict regulations in the United States, you can be guaranteed that the food, the seafood is safe. You know, on the flip side, wild versus farm-raised, you know, sometimes it's personal preference. People only want to eat fish that come from the wild. But as I mentioned, there's fewer fish coming from the wild because we've overfished the oceans. So with fish farms and aquaponics, you can see that those were raised right around the corner from a local farm.
We're talking with Chris Hartlib, who is at UW-Stevens Point, professor there, Brandon Gottsacker, who owns an aquaponics farm in the Cooley region, taking your questions about aquaponics at 800-642-1234. Owen is joining us from Waiawiga. Hi, Owen.
Hi, good morning. Yeah, we try to eat a lot of fish for different reasons. I was wondering, do you guys sell direct to the consumer right off the farm? And if you don't, why don't you? And is your fish sushi grade? And are you using a nutritionist like Cargill or somebody like that that you're purchasing your grain from? Or do you have your own grain storage and make your own rations? And who do you use for a nutritionist?
All right, Owen, thank you for those. Brandon, did you get that list?
Yeah, I did. I actually wrote it down. Your first question, I just answered. We actually are going to start selling our fish online, I would say, first quarter of next year, so in the next couple of months. We had to transition a little bit when COVID first hit, and we sold some fish online to just kind of feel it out. You know, we're really kind of, to be honest with you, farmers. And so when we needed to jump on the direct-to-consumer train, that wasn't necessarily easy right away when you're shipping fish all over the country. So, but hopefully we got all the bugs worked out, and we plan to start that here in the next month or two. Our fish, I would say, is sushi grade. We don't necessarily put that on the label, but I eat our salmon. I eat our salmon raw all the time. We enjoy eating it like sashimi style. Because these fish are farmed and they're in a controlled environment, you don't have to worry about parasites or anything like that. And then we do work with multiple nutritionists, actually. So today we're buying our feed from a couple different companies around the world that are the best in the business when it comes to salmon health. And then we also have some people we work with directly, nutritionists that we work with directly that help us make sure that our diets for our fish are exactly what those fish need.
Yeah, that's a great questions there, Owen. Chris, you know, as we were saying, you were saying that we have, we have basically put too much stress on our fish systems and overfished. What does it look like with international trade and the international markets influencing what we can produce here in the U.S.?
Yeah, that's kind of interesting in that the world realizes that the U.S. produces high quality seafood, and we obviously don't produce enough to feed all the Americans that want it, so we import a tremendous amount. But the U.S. also exports a tremendous amount of the U.S. farm-raised seafood because some of the people in the, let's just call them the upper classes of foreign countries, only trust U.S. seafood, not even the seafood raised in their own country. So we have a really great reputation, but we can certainly increase production in the U.S. to feed more of our own people before we start shipping it out to other nations.
This hour, we have aquaponics experts Chris Hartlib there of UW-Stevens Point, Brandon Gottsacker, who heads up Superior Fresh, which at night, by the way, the greenhouse glows purple, encouraging the leafy greens in the darker months with those LEDs. Have you bought more or less seafood products since the pandemic? Do you run a restaurant featuring fish on the menu? Have you struggled with fish inventory or market prices? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation about aquaponics and the prospects for year-round fish farming and vegetable growing in Wisconsin. Brandon Gottsacker operates the large aquaponics farm Superior Fresh in Hixton. Chris Hartlib is with us, a professor teaching courses in aquaculture and aquaponics at UW-Stevens Point, and they stay with us. Let's bring in Russ now in Stoughton with a question. Hi, Russ.
Good morning. I live in Dane County here in Wisconsin, and we have a number of large lakes with game fish in them, and all of the lakes with the fish in them have a warning about how much mercury is there is in the fish you catch and how many you should or should not eat. And I'm wondering, is anybody doing fish farming for game fish like perch or walleye or northern, or is it legal to do something like that so that you would have mercury-free fish?
Chris, go ahead.
Sure. A couple of numbers there, and that is that Wisconsin has about 2,500 registered fish farms. So there's a lot of people raising fish. I would say about 80 of those farms are actually what you would consider commercial size, like Superior Fresh. The nice thing about fish farms is that you control what goes into them. So the reason you get those mercury concerns of lakes and rivers is because fish do what they call bioaccumulate the mercury from the environment. When we get something like aquaponics, you're controlling the environment. You're controlling the water and what's in it coming into your system. You're controlling the food the fish get. So you can be sure that you're not getting bioaccumulation in an aquaculture or aquaponics system.
And Brandon, you also raise steelhead trout, is that right?
We used to, actually.
You used to,
We're no longer raising steelhead.
Okay, so you're strictly salmon.
Correct.
Yeah. Have you ever thought of introducing other fish, or do you try to keep your operation to one type of fish?
Yeah, typically you would keep an operation to one fish. I mean, one fish is tough enough in mastering that species. But we did play around with steelhead for a little bit. They performed extremely well. I hope that we can build a steelhead farm someday. And then we're also playing around with coho or Pacific salmon.
Do you find that there are the market is there for salmon? People buy it. Are other fish like salmon, or do you find that salmon is a real stable market for you?
Yeah, so salmon is the most consumed seafood in the United States. I think it takes up about 60% of all seafood consumed. Unfortunately, with that, though, it's been very much commoditized. And like Chris had said earlier, typically these fish are farmed on the other side of the world and shipped here. And sometimes, you know, they're farmed on the coast of Canada, shipped to China to be processed, and then shipped all the way back to the United States. And it's just crazy. So it's really, really been commoditized. And to be the first ones in the United States to raise Atlantic salmon on land and these types of systems is really kind of changing the game and the industry as a whole. And so we're excited to make significant changes in how our seafood move and how they're grown and where they come from.
Let's bring in Mark now in Wisconsin Dells. Hi, Mark.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
My question relates basically to iodine in your fish because, you know, the interstate highways were able to help solve the goiter problem in the upper Midwest by getting seafood up here, which is high in iodine normally, and then also the USDA required that salt, iodine was added to salt. You see it on the shelf, iodine salt. And that solved the goiter problem. I remember seeing goiters in people. I'm old enough to remember that. So the question is, how does your fish raised here in your system compare in iodine to marine-raised fish?
Mark, thanks. Go ahead, Brandon.
So we test our fish regularly. Not only do we test the feed ingredients, we also test the water, and then we test the tissue of the fish. And so we can test for everything from iodine to mercury, any type of other heavy metal that people would typically be concerned with. But because our water is coming out of the ground, we use fresh groundwater from our wells, again, that we can monitor and that we test regularly. We would know if there was a concern or if there was a large amount of some sort of contaminant in the water, and that would raise red flags immediately. Luckily, knock on wood, we've never had that issue. We don't plan on having that issue, but we would react extremely quickly if we saw something like that. So that should not be a concern with our fish specifically.
Well, we only have a couple seconds left, Chris, but I want to ask you, are you optimistic about the future of aquaponics in Wisconsin?
I am, because one of the factors you see is that a lot of the people getting into aquaponics are young. So it's a new generation, such as people like Brandon, who are starting to increase production and notoriety of Wisconsin seafood. So I think it's very promising, and I think we've got a great future.
Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's Chris Hartlib, professor of fisheries biology at UW-Stevens Point, Brandon Gottsacker, president of Superior Fresh, an aquaponics farm in West Central Wisconsin. The COVID pandemic has claimed the lives of more than 4,000 people in Wisconsin. And this week, as we approach the end of the year, WPR is profiling some of the people we've lost. Today, Bram Sable-Smith tells us about Dwayne Bark, who died in October.
Dwayne Bark was nearly late for his wedding. He went out golfing that morning with the minister, and they left the course later than intended. When Pam, the bride-to-be, showed up at the church to drop off her dress, the door was locked because the minister had the key.
And I'll never forget when I was beating at the door, they were whisking around to open the church up so I could get in because even the minister was running late. So we laugh about that.
There were many laughs over the next 38 years. Dwayne was a joker with a knack for cutting tension, a useful skill for an educator and football coach, two of the great passions of Dwayne's life. As his mom, Jill Bark, remembers, their roots go back to the day he entered the world.
His very, very, very first gift when he was born was a football.
It was a gift from a family friend who misspelled Dwayne's name on the ball and had to run to the store to buy shoe polish to add an E. Dwayne continued that tradition when his own children were born, but with better spelling. His sons Bradley and Brian each got a football, and daughter Brittany got a volleyball. Football practices were a family affair for all of the Bark children, even before they were old enough to suit up themselves. Brian, the middle child, was always the water boy. One time he was picking up water bottles at practice when the whistle blew, and a stampede of high schoolers ran him over.
I remember realizing all of a sudden I was in my dad's hands, and he was just looking down at me saying, "Brian, this will be all right. You're not hurt. You're going to be fine."
Brian says that's the kind of guy his dad was for everybody, always there to pick you up when you needed it most. By the time the pandemic hit, Dwayne was the superintendent in Marquesan, leading that community through these unprecedented and scary times. He recorded this video message for the families of the students.
If you have a need, please reach out to us, even if it's a personal need. If you have a situation that you need to talk to somebody or you need something, please, please call us.
Dwayne caught COVID this summer from a family friend who tested negative before coming over for a visit. Everyone in the house got sick, Dwayne, Brittany, Pam, and Pam's mother. Dwayne went to the hospital on July 23rd, his 61st birthday. By August, he was placed in a medically induced coma and hooked up to a ventilator. Bradley, the oldest son, says it was surreal.
This is our hero. This is our mentor. This is our coach. This is our dad that is laying in there with a tube down his throat just to help him breathe.
Dwayne fought for months, but by October, it was clear he was dying. His family gathered around his hospital bed one last time. Bradley read Bible verses of comfort. When he finished the Lord's Prayer,
Dad opened up his eyes, wide as could be, looking up at the ceiling of the hospital room, looking up at the ceiling, tears coming out of his eyes, and he flatlined at that point.
2 months later, Dwayne's father, Doug, also died from COVID. It's been a trying time for the Bark family. Pam says some days it still feels like she's waiting for Dwayne to come back home.
My mind tells me, with my faith, I know where he's at. You know, I know he's in heaven. My heart just hasn't caught up to it yet.
Dwayne Bark was nearly late for his wedding because he was golfing with the minister. 38 years later, it still gets a laugh. But it was also an omen for the life Dwayne built, a life full of sports, faith, and family. Bram Sable-Smith, Wisconsin Public Radio.
And tomorrow, WPR will bring you the story of a Milwaukee man who overcame his own struggles and became champion for veterans. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.